point out, I will be representing our principal investigators who couldn't be here today. I wasn't involved in the actual design and implementation of the study, but I did help with the analysis, so I'll try to answer questions as best as I can. So today's talk will highlight findings from a hospital-based study evaluating attitudes and practices of healthcare workers relating to patients with HIV/AIDS in Tanzania. As many of you know, the HIV/AIDS epidemic has been accompanied by stigma since its inception, and the reality of HIV/AIDS-related stigma has compounded the epidemics over the last 20 years. The life-threatening nature of the disease, the association with already stigmatized behaviors, and the belief that people with HIV/AIDS are being justifiably punished for their actions all contribute to HIV/AIDS-related stigma. There are really several definitions of both stigma and discrimination. Noted simply, we've considered provider stigma to encompass negative attitudes towards patients with HIV/AIDS, and discrimination as arbitrary differences in practices towards patients as a result of HIV/AIDS. The objectives of the study were to assess knowledge, attitudes, perceived risk of infection, and discriminatory practices. Data was obtained by cross-sectional design using structured questionnaires for each of four topic areas. Providers were selected from three district hospitals in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. 204 providers were interviewed, representing a response rate of about 82%. As you can see here, the sample was representative in terms of training, gender, provider type, and other characteristics. Jumping right into results, our first topic area was HIV/AIDS-related knowledge. This was measured using 13 questions, both multiple choice and true and false questions, assessing provider knowledge on HIV virology, presenting symptoms, modes of transmission, and prevention strategies. Providers were given 1 point for each correct answer. This graph here shows the distribution of scores as measured by the percent correct out of the total number of questions. Providers on average correctly answered about 72% of the knowledge items, though scores ranged from 44% to 100%. And almost a third of providers, a little over a third, had scores of less than 70%. Within the knowledge areas, the higher scores were in presenting symptoms with questions such as, what do HIV-positive patients look like, or how do you know if someone is HIV-positive? Scores were lowest in the prevention strategies, which I'll talk a little bit more about. By HIV/AIDS training, which is here on this graph, there were no really major differences in knowledge scores. Here are selected items with fairly low scores by all providers. There are gaps relating to vertical transmission of HIV through breastfeeding, for example, and gaps in clinical strategies for reducing the risk of transmission, such as not recapping needles. Many providers also noted that instruments used on patients with HIV/AIDS should be separated and sterilized separately, disinfected more rigorously, or that a different instrument kit altogether should be used on patients who are HIV positive. To assess attitudes towards patients, we used a 27-item attitudinal scale with an alpha score of 0.84. Providers were given a range of statements regarding patients and asked to rate the degree to which they agree to those statements. The agreement scale had four options: strongly agree, agree, disagree, and strongly disagree, and the scores were weighted by agreement and whether statements were negatively or positively worded towards patients. The most common beliefs were blame for infection, differences in sympathy by the perceived mode of infection, as well as concerns of exposure to HIV, and less emphasis was placed on actual isolation or separation of patients. This graph here provides a glimpse of some of the responses for selected items by gender, and I'm sorry if you can't see that. I'll just go through a few. For example, 72% said that they feel more sympathetic of individuals who got AIDS from a blood transfusion, for example, as compared to sexual transmission. And 78% of providers also responded that HIV-positive women should not have children. Nearly a half said that most people with AIDS only have themselves to blame for the infection, or that people with many sexual partners, also more than a half, were noted to be deserving of AIDS. In almost all cases, this graph here shows differences in responses by gender, the gender of the provider. In almost all cases, so female providers are noted in green, they had more, also had more negative attitudes as compared to male providers for all of the items, with the exception of one. We also examined provider concerns of working with HIV/AIDS patients, and a third of providers said that they worried about getting AIDS from one of their HIV-positive patients. A small minority also indicated that if assigned to patients with AIDS, they worried of putting their family and friends at risk of contracting the virus, and that if people, meaning people in the community, knew that they took care of HIV/AIDS patients, they felt that they themselves would be stigmatized. At the same time, there was an abundance of positive attitudes towards patients. And just to highlight some of the findings, so regarding patient rights to the same quality of care, being treated in a caring and respectful manner, as well as an overall willingness to provide care despite some of the concerns that were noted earlier. Our third section assessed more specifically provider perceptions of infection risk as a result of their work, and we examined perceived risk of infection within two contexts. One was casual contact, and the second one was contact with patients during medical procedures. Providers here were asked to rate, again, their perceptions of risk for the examples, and options included no risk, low risk, moderate risk, and high risk. In terms of casual contact, a somewhat surprising finding was that a relative concern of providers was some risk for any one of five casual contact examples, most commonly being sharing a glass, a drinking glass, or shaking hands with an AIDS patient, specifically if he or she presented with a generalized skin rash. Less commonly noted was touching a patient when assessing him or her. For medical procedures, the responses were a little bit more varied. We also asked providers to assign risk ratings to accidental needle stick, recapping needles, cleaning and dressing a wound, insertion and removal of an IV, administering injections, delivering babies, or performing surgeries. Here it's shown by provider type. So less skilled providers were more likely to assign high risk to any one of the procedures. Also, not shown here, for each of the procedures, providers for each item, there were those who assigned no risk as well as high risk, indicating to some extent some evidence for overestimation and perhaps even underestimation of risk. Although we need more research certainly to pull that, tease that apart. Our last research area examined provider-reported discriminatory practices. Providers were asked to report their perception on the frequency of 20 discriminatory practices. That is, to what extent their peers or the hospital in general actually enact these behaviors. We looked at practices within the categories of denial of services, substandard treatment, selective use of precautions here, and I just noted the percent of providers who indicated that these behaviors or practices have taken place. For each individual item, for most practices, never was the most common response. Yet, as a summary measure, about half of providers noted at least one of the practices occurring with HIV/AIDS patients in their hospital. Just to give you a few examples of these categories, so for active denial of services, that includes, for example, hospitals not offering treatment because the patient is going to die anyway, or not admitting HIV/AIDS patients because their health is already poor, or not performing surgeries. Passive denial, cleverly denying admission, although not outrightly denying it. Substandard treatment includes delay of treatment or postponing treatment, as well as discontinuing treatment if the patient is found to be HIV/AIDS or HIV positive. We also looked at other examples of discrimination, such as financial discrimination and isolation of patients, and as well as testing of patients without consent, most of which providers said did not happen in those hospitals. So we were interested in exploring the relationship between knowledge, attitudes, and perceived risk, as well as provider practice. This table here presents results from a multivariate regression. After controlling for differences in individual characteristics, we found that HIV/AIDS-related knowledge was inversely associated with negative attitudes, and that a higher perception of risk, at least in terms of casual contact, was also associated with more negative attitudes. To examine how these constructs might relate with practice, we looked at selective use of universal precautions, which was the only practice that we measured by self-report. Our findings indicate an association of negative attitudes and an increased likelihood of selectively using universal precautions, so using gloves or aprons, particularly when you suspect that the patient is HIV positive. So just to sum up the results, first, I think what's interesting here is that despite the duration of the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Tanzania, we still found significant gaps in terms of knowledge and also infection prevention. The majority of providers felt that use of separate materials was a way, an appropriate means for preventing transmission. Second, the data reveals a need to understand the complex sort of interplay of both positive and negative attitudes and how providers situate beliefs which perhaps seem even contradictory in thinking about HIV/AIDS patients. On the one hand, there is a prevalence of negative beliefs in terms of blame for infection, but also positive beliefs as well. There is also the unexpected finding that providers, in terms of casual contact, and providers really not linking their reactions per se to their knowledge of transmission modes, which were pretty high in terms of the knowledge scores. I think these findings highlight real concerns here among providers in terms of occupational exposure to HIV/AIDS. Also, just to note some of the limitations of this study, which are always important to keep in mind, all of the data collected here was quantitative, and so there was no qualitative study which would have been useful in terms of teasing apart a bit more some of the attitudes and beliefs towards patients, particularly in terms of perceptions of risk. One way to strengthen it would have been to have a little bit more contextual factors. For example, with the medical procedures, it was unclear to some extent what the providers had in mind when answering some of the items. There are always going to be some unmeasured factors, for instance, each provider's experience working with HIV/AIDS patients, and also just to note, the cross-sectional nature of the study limited our ability to really look at causal relationships. So next steps, certainly with regard to next steps, more in-depth understanding of these factors will be important. And also taking a look at how we can strengthen many of the existing interventions to eliminate stigma and discrimination towards patients in an overall effort to combat the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Thank you.